Hello, everybody. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I'm live tonight. I was gone the entire month of August, and they were doing old shows out of the archives during all of that time. But now I'm back on live, so we'll be able to do the whole show tonight. But it's been quite a month anyway, as I've been all over the world and back during that time, and we've had a lot of things happening. So I just want to kind of catch you up, and then I'll be talking about some other things. But I started out by going to London, and I was in London for 2 weeks. I'd had to give talks at the College of Psychic Studies and the Theosophical Society and the Ashram there in London. And a lot of you know that I do work a lot with the Sivananda yoga retreats, in the Ashram groups. And they have ashrams all over the world. So now everywhere I go, I usually end up speaking at one of those. But I also had one of my hypnosis classes in London, and it was a very good one. So it was quite a 2 weeks. There was a lot going on. And this time I took one of my daughters with me who has never been over there. I usually take somebody with me because I like to let them see the different countries too when we're doing this. So she had not seen anything, so we took the all-day tours and went out to the Windsor Castle and Stonehenge and the Roman Baths in Bath. So it was a lot. That was an entire day tour just to see all of that. And I've seen these things before, but I wanted her to be able to see these. And then we also did the tour of the Tower of London so because she could see the crown jewels. And then the trip down the River Thames. I really like London. I go there sometimes once a year anyway, and it's one of my favorite cities. It's I don't know what you would call it. Every city I go to seems to have a different kind of an energy. London has a very good energy as far as I'm concerned. I'm very compatible with it, and it seems to be very relaxing when I go there, even though it's very noisy. It has a big city atmosphere, but it's a different kind of an energy for me anyway. And then I had to go on to Paris, and that's the first time I'd been there, and we decided this time we were going to do something different. Instead of flying to Paris, we took the channel. That's the tunnel that they built underneath the water from London going over to Paris, over to France. And I've never done that before. But we found out that it was cheaper to do that, to take the train, than it was to take the airplane. And it takes about the same amount of time. One thing I liked, you didn't have all the waiting around in the airports like you usually do. Sitting in the train station was much faster, and you could get on the train quicker. The whole thing seemed to move faster. And I've been told that the train that goes through that is the fastest train in the world. I don't know if that's true or not, but when they built it, it was supposed to be a really quick way to get from London over to France anyway. And the tunnel has only been open for a couple of years. So this was the first time we were able to do that. A lot of people kept telling me, well, I wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't want to be under the water, traveling under the water that long. But the amazing thing is, when you're on that train, you don't even realize you're underneath the water. It's a two-hour train ride, but we were thinking only about 20 minutes of it was underneath the ocean. And it was just dark, like going through a tunnel, but you didn't really notice anything was different. So there wasn't even a chance to get worried about it or get scared. I think it's probably a lot worse when you go through the Big Dig up in Boston. When that opened up, they had a lot of leakage from the water when it went underneath the river. This seemed to me to be a whole lot safer. So we took the channel, and we ended up in Paris. And I had to go outside of Paris to one of the ashrams there in France to do several talks. And after all of the activity and the noise in London, I told my daughter, I said, when we get out to the ashram, it's going to be quiet. We won't have all this big city noise. And that was true. When we got out there at the Sivananda Ashram, it's out by Orleon. It was quiet. It was peaceful. We're out in the country. And I don't know, the yoga retreats are just so wonderful and restful. They kind of give you a break that way. So I really like to work with the Swamis. They're very good people. So we were there for almost a week doing talks. And while we were there, they took us to this castle. I'm trying to think exactly where it would be, but it would be between Orleans and Paris. But it's a big castle, and it was the home of King Louis XIV. The thing was huge, and it's been kept up. They said it dates back to the Renaissance, and it's been kept up, and it's in perfect condition. And it's arranged like they have furniture and everything in there from the time period. And it's a real tourist attraction. There were lots of people when we went there that day. And you can see everything just the way it looked during the time when these people were living there. When they would come out, they said when the king would come out from Paris, this would be like a country home, and he'd stay out there. But my daughter said the one thing she thought was unusual is they actually allowed you to touch things. And London, you know, when you go into Windsor Castle and all the other places, they won't let you near anything. There's usually barriers to keep you away from furniture or tapestries or anything like that. But in this one, you were actually allowed to touch things, which seemed different. But there was one guide who was talking to us, and she said that back when this was going on, the king would have about 160 people would come to him with him whenever he would go out there. We have a long train of wagons and horses pulling everything when he would go out to the castle. And she said they took all of the furniture with them. Everything that was used in the castle was taken each time he went there. And I don't know how many months he would stay there, but when he would leave, all of the furniture and everything in the castle was loaded up and taken back to Paris. Now, that would have been quite a job. No wonder they had to have 160 people come with them just to pick up these things and load them up in the wagons and take them back. They said they did that because the only time there was any people in the castle was when the king was there. When he would leave, the place would be empty. So they just had to pick up everything and take it back. So every time he would come, they had these long lines of wagons and carriages and horses, and you could see the tree-lined roads that they would have come down, bring all these things in, and then when he gets ready to leave, they just load the whole thing up and take it back. So I guess you can do that if you're a king. But I thought that was an interesting little note of history when we were there. But after France, then I had to go to Moscow. Now, I've been to Moscow twice before, and I've given a class there, and I was going back to meet with some of the people that I had done the class with before, and also to speak at an international conference they had in Moscow. So I was there on business anyway, and there was a lot of other things we were going to do. So here we wound up in Moscow. I have this wonderful girl, her name is Julia, who is, my daughter's name is Julia too, but this one is our translator. And she's a really wonderful girl. And every time I go to Moscow, I always get the same translator, and she knows us very well, and she knows metaphysics, and she knows about the books. So it's a lot easier for her to translate because she knows what it's all about. And she also translated my class when I gave it over there 2 years ago. So she was with us the entire time we were there. And when she's not doing this, she works for a law firm. But this kind of gives her time off, too, away from the business part, just to hang out with us and take us and show us around. So I wanted her to take my daughter, Julia, down to the Red Square. I've been there before, but I wanted Julia to see all these things. So it was really nice the whole time we were there. I now have two publishers in Russia, so I met with the second one. And the Nostradamus books are now out. The first one is in print over there in Russian, and the other two are coming out in the next few months. And we have contracts. They're going to publish just about all of my books in Russia. The first publisher has two of them already done. So that means I will be going back over there a lot because there's a lot more things happening for me in Russia. It just seems so strange to be going into these countries like that. As I said, they have different energies. And my daughter didn't really feel comfortable in Paris. She said it had a different kind of an energy. Now, Moscow is a beautiful, wonderful city, a very modern city, even though it has these ancient buildings. And the people there are very nice. But it has more of a chaotic type of energy, rather like New York. If you go to New York, it has an energy that's very busy and, you know, chaotic. Everybody's rushing everywhere. And it's that kind of an intense energy like New York. That's the energy that I feel when I go to Moscow. It's not as laid back or, I don't want to say quiet and relaxing isn't a good term for London either, but it's just a different type of energy between the English and the Russians. So, and one thing that I find difficult is, you know, when you go there, there's no English anywhere. Nobody speaks English, and your ears are bombarded by all of this foreign language. And I sat at meetings where I was meeting with different people who want to do some work with me. And I said my brain was turning to mush. There was nothing it could relate to because there's not a single word that we can associate with the English language. And also, whenever you get into any country that doesn't have the Romance languages, like the Cyrillic alphabets in those parts of the world, you can't even read signs. You can't, there's nothing to relate to, nothing in English at all. I've learned now to pick up what some of the signs mean for different buildings like restaurants and things like that. But it's totally out of your element. So I really think I admire these people when they come from those countries and come here and have to learn our language because it's just totally different. I've learned some other languages enough to get around, but I think Russian would be very difficult. So I can appreciate what those people go through when they try to learn ours. Because you may not know it, but English is the most difficult language in the world with the Romance language, the Romance alphabet. It's the most difficult language, mostly because of our pronunciation. The most difficult language of all is Japanese and Chinese because of all the different characters you have to learn and all the different pronunciations. But the ones that have the alphabet like we use, the Romance language, English is the hardest to learn. Spanish is the easiest. So I admire anyone who comes and tries to learn English. Nobody should ever make fun of anyone just because they have accents or make mistakes in the wording and the pronunciation because it is really difficult to master. I told one of my grandsons that it's the most difficult language in the world, and he says, "I don't think so. I can talk it." Of course, he was a kid. You know, he didn't realize what I was talking about. But to try to go and learn it with all of the strange pronunciations we put into it, it's not easy. So when I go to those countries and I have to listen and your brain is trying to decipher something, and it can't get anything out of it. It's, I said my brain was turning to mush anyway. So we had meetings over there with the different publishers and talked about a lot of things that they're wanting to do. And now something else important is happening in over there in Moscow. I met with a man who was with an academy in Moscow. And this academy is all over the Soviet Union and the former satellite countries. And they said right now I think he's got over 17,000 members. This is an academy that is teaching alternative healing and natural medicine and the herbals and all of the things that I'm really interested in and that I'm working with. They are teaching this. It's just like when I told you before, I gave my class at the the Northern New Mexico College in Santa Fe. When I did that in April, that they have the four-year course, and they're giving a BS in the natural medicines and the alternative. This is doing the same thing. They said they have a 4- and 5-year course in Moscow with this academy. It's called the Nostradamus Academy. And they are teaching all forms of natural healing. And they are especially approaching medical doctors, traditional medical doctors, to come and take these courses. And in Russia, they're being encouraged to combine the two modalities, the regular medicine with the alternative and the herbal. They are being encouraged to mix the two together. And this is having a great deal of success over there. And they are having a 4-year course and a 5-year course teaching the same things that the ones in New Mexico are teaching. The acupuncture, the homeopathy, aromatherapy, every phase you can think of the alternative healing. So the man was talking to me. They want me to be involved with this, as if I don't have enough to do. I keep being led in so many different directions. And he wants me to come back. He said come back at the beginning of October, which is only a month away, and speak at another conference they're going to have in Moscow. It's an international conference. And I said, I can't do that. I'm getting ready to go on another long trip toward the end of October. I have to go back to Australia, New Zealand, China, Taiwan. And I said, I don't know how I can come over here just to do that. But this man was very insistent and very persuasive, and he said, you must come for this. So what I'm going to do is take a real, literal flying trip, just go over, go in, do the conference, and then turn around and come back the next day. That's a long way to go just for that. But, you know, now they have direct flights with American Airlines. That's what we took this time on our way back, a direct flight from American Airlines from Chicago. And they only started that a few months before I scheduled my trip. So that means you don't have to stay on the plane as long. You don't have to transfer at London and all the time spent waiting around the airports. So now I can just get to Chicago and take a direct flight to Moscow, which will help a lot. But I'm going to be going back the 1st of October to do this international conference there. But this man wants me to do is to be a part of this academy. And he wants me to come back and to teach my hypnosis method, not only in Moscow, but he said all over Russia, the Baltic states, and going into all of the former communist countries. That's going to be a big order. That's going to mean a lot of traveling back and forth to that part of the world. And I didn't know if I'd be able to do it or not. I usually do a 3-day course, but we said if I do that over there, when you do with a translator, I noticed my last class I did over there with a translator, it takes longer because you say a sentence, they say a sentence, and it goes back and forth. And I knew I wasn't teaching them everything that I could teach them because there just wasn't enough time in the 3 days. So that's when I told the man, and he says, all right, you can do a 4 or 5 day class to make sure we can get all of the information in. So when I go back the 1st of October, I guess a lot of what we're going to be working on is going to be setting up some kind of a schedule that how can I do my work here in the States. I'm still having classes here, and also my work with my publishing company and seeing my clients and going back and forth to Russia to do the teaching. He said he's also are connected with parts of this academy are also in Europe. Well, I've done classes in Europe, but this will be expanding. So I have no idea where all of this is going. It's just like everything was more or less out of my control anyway. It's growing and growing. I said that many years ago. It was like my work, my books and everything took on a life of their own. And they were out there living and evolving and changing. Just the way you let a child go, and when the child goes and grows up and does its own thing and goes on its own, it begins to create a life of its own. And that's why I feel my work is done. It's gone way beyond anything I could have ever envisioned when I started this whole thing. So I'll find out more when I go back, but they're going to be getting me a permanent teaching visa so I can be able to go back and forth. So I guess next year is going to be busy, and it's going to be a totally different type of busy than I've had in the past. People tell me, well, I've never known a time that you weren't busy, that you weren't doing something. So anyway, this is what's in the works right now. So I just got back the first of this week from Moscow after being gone the whole month. I'm barely getting over jet lag when it was Tuesday morning, or, you know, Monday night, Labor Day night, Tuesday morning. I was on the Coast to Coast radio show. And I've done this many times in the past. I've done it whenever Art Bell was doing it. I did it when Mike Siegel was doing it. And I've done George Nuri before. Well, this is George Nuri who was doing the Coast to Coast. And when you do that, you're on all night long. And I got off the air, finally got to bed that morning at 4:30 in the morning. And it was so funny, when I first did it, back when Art Bell was doing it, we had 2 800 numbers. And we had to take turns sleeping after the show because that phone didn't quit ringing all day and all night for a week. The next times I did it, then I noticed we're changing. It was half and half, telephones, and the internet was beginning to come in, and we were getting all of these messages and orders through the internet. This time it was totally different. It's almost 90% is internet. We're getting some phone calls, but the vast majority is coming in over the internet. That shows you how things have changed and evolved since they've been doing it and since I was working with them. But another thing I noticed that has changed also, in the early days when I was on the Art Bell shows and I was doing the Nostradamus material, which was controversial, we had a lot of the emails, and I mean, I'm talking when you're doing this, the calls and the emails. Now we are getting, 400 to 500 emails are coming in every day, and it's only been a couple of days since we did the show. So the people out there who are sending me emails are going to just have to wait until we can go through this pile. They're just so much. We have to sort them out and see what we can do about answering them. But in those early days when I was doing this, the calls that were coming in, the emails, there was a lot of skepticism. There were critics out there, and there were skeptics. There were people who accused me of just about everything you could think of. that I was a liar, that I was a fraud, that I was making all these things up. I've had some people tell me, they said, well, you must be the best fiction writer in the world to have made all these stories up that you write about. I said, if you can show me how in the world I could make these things up, I would really be glad to know. But in those early days, there was a lot of skepticism because they couldn't understand what I was doing and how I was getting my information. This time, I was really surprised. We're not getting the skepticism. We're not getting the criticism. The people who are writing in and calling are very much into these things. I mean, that's showing a change in the mindset, that the people's minds are getting used to these things now, these concepts, the New Age, or whatever you want to call it. But they're no longer doubting it, they're accepting it. Out of all of these hundreds and hundreds of emails that we've been getting, I've had three, I think, is all I've had that were negative. And I don't think that's bad odds at all compared to the way it was in the beginning. In those days, I had to brace myself and just tell myself, you can't take this personally. These people are entitled to their own opinions, and I respect that. When I'm doing a lecture, if I get someone in the audience that wants to argue with me and give me a hard time, I usually just say, I respect your opinion, and then I go on, because you're not going to win anything, and everybody is entitled to their own beliefs and their own opinions, so I respect that. But this time, things are different, and I think it's a good sign. One of the ones who was a negative and was a critic was a religious fanatic, which I've always gotten those from time to time, who didn't like some of the things that I had said. He was misinterpreting what I was saying as going against the Bible, going against Jesus, which I didn't mean that at all. But this is where people are, and that's fine. And if he misinterpreted what I was saying, that's okay. So that was one of them. And there was another one that said, are you a phony or are you a Satanist? And that one I had to laugh. How can they accuse you of being a Satanist when all I ever talk about in my books and on my show is love and how you can change the world with love? Love is the greatest power there is. If everyone knew these things and understood the rules of reincarnation and knew the real power of love, there wouldn't be any wars. There wouldn't be any violence. This is what I've been talking about in my lectures and in my books and on this radio show now for almost 3 years. So how can somebody say I'm a Satanist when that's what I'm focusing on? But here again, they're entitled to their opinion. This is what they want to believe. I don't argue with people because it's only a wasted effort. So that was one of them. There's another man who just totally misunderstood everything. He may have come in the middle of the show or toward the end. Maybe they get a sentence or a part of it and don't really understand what you're trying to say. But the vast majority of the responses have been extremely positive. One thing I thought was interesting, even the people that were calling in when I was on the air, I said, these young people weren't even alive when I started my work. And they're in their 20s. And they got it. They understand it. And they said, this is what I believe. This is what I know this is true. And the ones who called in, their parents were right there with them. And they said, yes, we all believe the same way about how the world is changing, how everything is different, and how these young people that are coming in are different. They are the hope of the world. And here we're getting all these young people who were calling in, and a lot of them were emailing, saying, yes, I understand that this is what I believe, this is what I think, but you can't tell people these things because they don't understand. I see a totally different type of audience here than there was 20 years ago. Maybe this is good. Things are changing. People are beginning to get it. They're beginning to understand what it's really all about. We have to get away from the violence. We've got to get away from the wars. We have to go towards love and understanding. And they're beginning to get this. And if this is the way it's going, then it's a good thing. There is hope for the world. And I did talk about the diets on the air. That's what I was thinking. In the time I've got left, I could go into some of these things. Some of these things I haven't brought up on my show. I don't think I have. Can you imagine doing 3 years of shows and trying to remember everything you talked about and everything you said? Be pretty hard, be pretty impossible. But main thing I've been lecturing on now all over the world is about the new earth and the way things are changing, the changing of the vibrations and the frequencies. And on the air the other night with George Nouri, we covered so many different topics, all the things that are in my books. We didn't cover them all because they're just too much, but we did a wide range. And that was what I liked. The people understood all of this, that we were able to cover such a wide range of topics. Now, in order to understand the new earth and the coming changes, that we're right in the middle of these changes right now. In order to understand this, you have to know about dimensions. Now, when I've talked about dimensions at my lectures, it depends on where you are in your development. I'm finding out these young people are really ahead of us now, ahead of the normal people out there. They understand a lot more than you give them credit for. Okay. Dimensions. We think this world right here and everything we can see and touch around us is all there is. That's not true. Everything is an illusion anyway. But there are many, many different dimensions around us all the time. We can't see them because they're vibrating at different frequencies and different speeds. Now, the scientists keep saying there are 4 dimensions, 5 dimensions. I've heard some of them say, oh, now we're thinking maybe there's 10 or 12. They are really limiting themselves because there is innumerable dimensions. They go into infinity. There are so many. They are limiting themselves to what they can number and count and understand, when a lot of this is way beyond anybody's understanding. That's the difference. That's the problem. These dimensions are all around us all the time. They're vibrating at different frequencies. And some of these dimensions, there's cities, there's people, there's different whole worlds in these other dimensions. We can't see them because of the vibration and the frequency. It's just like when you see a fan blade or a propeller blade. When it speeds up, it becomes invisible because it is going so fast. That's the way the other dimensions around us are. They are vibrating at a much faster frequency. I've been told Earth, our reality right here, is one of the slowest, densest of all the dimensions. It's very slow, very heavy. The ETs don't like to come into this dimension at all because it hurts them. It weighs them down, and they'd rather not do it. But this is one of the ways that the ETs travel, because they are able to go from dimension to dimension. And they do it by changing the vibration and frequency of their spacecraft. they're able to make the craft vibrate at different frequencies. So when some people have told me they're watching something in the sky, and it's more noticeable at night, they'll see a light, they know there's something up there, and all of a sudden it just blinks out, disappears. Other times they're watching something in the sky, and something will just suddenly appear where there wasn't anything there before. All that has happened was that the object, if it was a spaceship, has increased the vibration and the frequency of the craft, and it has moved into the other dimension, and it disappears. The same thing happens when it comes into our dimension, our reality. By slowing down the vibration and the frequency, it suddenly appears. It's just like Star Trek, when they talk about engage, and here they're going at a different speed, and all of a sudden they get where they're going instantaneously. It's because they have speeded up the vibrations and the frequency of the craft. Now, this is one of the ways they travel. A lot of the hardcore investigators have argued with me about this. They want to know what kind of fuel, what kind of engines to the spacecraft that allow them to go from this our planet to the next star system out there. How can they go that fast? When they don't realize it's not being done by fuel, it's not being done by motors, it's being done by changing the frequency and vibration of the craft. There's also crystals on board the craft that are used to store energy, and these are also used. But I've been told the ETs do a lot of it just with their minds. They're able to power the craft by their minds. They can do it with one mind, or they can do it with the group mind of everyone on the craft. And the energy that they put out this way is stored in the crystals. This is one of the ways that they propel the craft. Now, your hardcore investigators can never understand this. They're looking for machines. They're wanting to know how to power the machines, how to do repel gravity. And they're not realizing it's not done that way at all. In my books, I've talked about this, on how they've told me, especially in the book, The Custodians, we go into some of the ways that they travel. But they're going back and forth between dimensions. Now, these dimensions are very real. They're right there. They're all around us. We are going in and out of these dimensions constantly. We're just not aware of it. It is, we don't realize it when it happens. It's not something dramatic that will call your attention to it. Sometimes it's very subtle, and we're constantly moving in and out of these. The only time we notice it is if something different is in the other dimension and gets our attention. And I have had wonderful letters and emails from people telling me the fantastic stories that they have had when they've just suddenly found themselves in another dimension. It's usually very subtle. But many of you can identify with the fact that, you know, you go to look for something, you know exactly where you put it, and then you go back trying to look for it again. It's gone. It's not there. And you say, but I know I put it right there. Then you wait a little while, a few hours or so, or maybe the next day, you go back, and there it is, exactly where you put it, exactly where you remembered putting it. I used to say it was my little gremlins playing tricks. And I'd say, hey, guys, I need that. Let's put it back. I think they were playing tricks with me. But it's actually, it was in another dimension for a little while. It just took a little trip, and then it brought game right back into ours. So they're constantly, these are some of the simpler ways to think of this. But, for instance, I had a girl who was in college, and she said, one day she came outside the dormitory, and they were doing construction right outside the dormitory. They were tearing up the streets. They had all the equipment. They had the machinery. They had the orange cones out there. There was a lot going on. The next day, she comes out of her dormitory, there's nothing out there. There's not even a sign that any construction had been going on at all. So in one reality, construction was happening, and in this reality, there was nothing there. Another woman said she was in an apartment building, and when she came down to the street, all of a sudden, she saw everything was like it was 50 years ago. The cars on the street, the people walking up and down the street with their clothes were different. They were 50 years ago. Everything looked different. The people didn't seem to be paying much attention to her, but it began to scare her because all of a sudden she was totally out of her reality. So the only way she could get back, she had to go back into the building and go back up to where she was and start over again. And when she did that, she was back in her own reality and in her own time. I've heard many stories like this. Some people have told me they'd be out driving in a strange area late at night, and they're on a country road or in the back somewhere, back road somewhere, and they're looking for a gas station because their car's running out of gas. They're going to have to find a place they can spend the night. All of a sudden, they'll find a real old-fashioned-looking gas station sitting out in the middle of nowhere with a very low price of gas, too. And they fill up their tank, and then they go on, and they find a nice little, like a bed and breakfast place out in the country, very low prices, and it was a really good place to spend the night. So on the way back, they're saying, well, I'm going to stop back at that same gas station and fill up again. Well, you know what happens when they go back. There is no gas station. And if they try to find the hotel, the bed and breakfast again, there is no bed and breakfast there. But it had to be real. They filled up on gas. They were able to drive their car. But something was real. They stayed in this bed and breakfast. They slept in a bed. So the only thing I can think, they were in another dimension, which was very convenient for them because otherwise they would have been lost out in the middle of nowhere, sleeping in a car waiting for help. I think your guides and guardian angels have a lot to do with this too. When you need help, they make things materialize and things come out of nothing. Now, these are strange, and a lot of these stories, they talk about ghosts or being stepping back in time into the past. Well, in my work, we found out that everything is the past, present, future is all the same anyway. It's all existing at the same time. So what's the difference? It's all just existing in different dimensions. Everything that has ever happened and everything that will happen are in these other dimensions. So we're able to go back and forth without even realizing it. So what is real? Is anything real? They say everything is an illusion anyway. But it's enough to get your attention anyway. I had another woman who told me, she came for a session, and she said, one of her questions, she was out jogging in Florida, and she's running down the street, and this is a city street in the subdivision. And down a few blocks ahead of her, she saw what looked like an airliner coming in so close to the ground that she could see it in among the trees. She could see the tail of the airliner, and she said, oh my gosh, it's crashing. And she ran all the way back to her house, turned on the news. Of course, there wasn't a word about it anywhere. And so one of her questions for the session, she wanted to know what happened that day. What was that? What did she see? So during the session, I asked the question, and you know who they are if you listen to my show enough and read my book, they said, while she was out jogging, she had entered another dimension. That's how subtle it is. You don't even know the difference. And in the other dimension, there was an airport over there a few blocks away. and all she saw was the airliner landing. But in her dimension, there was not an airport over there. Strange. There's a lot of these strange things that happen. I guess I hear more of it because I'm out there in the public. My books are these kinds, so people are always telling me stories. They're always sending me stories. Another strange one that I did have a problem trying to answer, a man said he went out to the airport, was watching the jets take off. As he watched this jet take off, it went forward in the air, then it went backwards, then it went forwards, and it went backwards, and then it went forward again before it took off. It was up in the sky. And then he watched, and another jet did the same thing. Took off. As it got in the sky, it went backwards and forwards again before it took off. And he said, you know, jets don't do that. Well, also, the clouds in the sky were doing the same thing, moving backwards and forwards. He went out on the street. Watch the cars. The cars were doing the same thing, backwards and forwards. And, you know, this is not, a car could do it a lot easier than a jet could, but this is not the way things operate. So in his email, he wanted to know what was going on. What was that all about? And the only answer I could come up with was that he may have been at a juncture where the two dimensions had not quite settled down and become solid to where they were joining or just meeting, and they were not quite in one or the other. Rather strange explanation, but that's the only thing I could come up with at the time. Of course, I'm still learning. There's a lot I don't know. But that's one example. But the best example that I like to give, and I say it at my lectures, and the other night I told it on the Coast to Coast show because it had to do with that show, was the last time I was on that show, I got this email afterwards, and it was from this woman, and she said there was three women, and they always listen to the Coast to Coast every night. But because it's on so late, they couldn't stay up. They had one of these long playing tapes, and they always set the machine so that it would record the show at a slow playing tape all night long. Then the next day, they could listen to the show. Well, the next morning, she gets up to listen to the show. It's not, the show wasn't on there, my show. Instead, it was a sports game. She called the radio station, and they said, oh, we're not broadcasting Coast to Coast anymore, and we don't care how many people protest. We're just not going to broadcast it anymore. So she called her friend. Her friend had recorded the show. She got the same results. Instead of getting my show, she got the sports game. The third woman on her tape player recorded my show. Now, what's going on here? All three of these women were recording the same show, they thought. On all three tapes, the call letters of the radio station were given. They knew they were listening to the same radio station. One of them got the show, the other ones didn't. They got this game. And then at the end of the letter, she said, oh, by the way, they are broadcasting Coast to Coast again. The only thing I could think of was there was two dimensions here. In one of those dimensions, the show didn't exist. Whereas I told this to George Nuri, you know, and he said, well, now we're in all the dimensions. But that's the only thing I can think of. In one of these dimensions, the show did not exist. But the other one was the same dimension that I was in, and the show was, they were able to get it. Now, right after this happened, a couple of weeks later, This was in Tennessee where these women were living. I was lecturing in Tennessee, and these women came to the lecture. And it was three elderly women, and they came up to me and they said, "We just want to tell, we came all this way just to tell you this really did happen, and we have the tapes to prove it." So for skeptics out there, here you've got proof. You've got physical proof on tape of a weird, strange experience. This is the kind of stuff I get all the time. I just learned to have an open mind, and I keep learning more and more, and strange things just keep happening. Now, we're going to be running out of time here in a little bit, so next week, I'm going to be home for another week. Next week, I'm going to go into how all of this ties in with the shifting of the Earth into another dimension, because it's a little complicated, and I don't want to rush it. I want to make sure I have plenty of time to tell so that people can understand. And I always get people that have many, many questions, and I don't have all the answers. That's why I ask so many questions. That's why I'm so curious in my work. I want to know more and more and more. But this is just one little example of how complex our reality is, and we don't even know it. We're so smug thinking we're over here, we know what everything is going on, and actually we don't have a clue of what's really going on. We just have to have an open mind for mystery. And I have such a curiosity. I'm always wanting to learn more and more and more. But I do want to tell everyone out there, I am having a class in Florida. That's my next class. It'll be the last one this year in the United States. If anybody is interested in taking my hypnosis class, it's going to be at near the airport in Daytona Beach, Florida. Well, let's hope those hurricanes aren't going to get in the way. They should be all gone by that time. But it's going to be around September the 18th. I'll be doing my hypnosis class in Daytona Beach, Florida. And this is open to anyone who has an interest in this type of thing. In the beginning, I used to say I was only going to teach hypnotists because I didn't know if anybody else could understand how to do this. Then I found out they have the most trouble because they've been so ingrained by what they were taught, they were really not willing to forget everything they were taught and try a new method. Now, those of you who know my work and listen to the show, read my books, know that I found a totally different way of hypnosis and were able to get remarkable results with it. This is what I teach. So anyone who is interested in this type of thing, I am now letting them take the class. Many people email and call and they say, well, I'm into Reiki, I'm into energy work. They're perfect because see, you don't have to unlearn something. And other people say, I'm not into any of this, but I have a passion. I want to learn to do it. I want to be able to help people. Anybody who really wants to do this, they take the class. I teach it step by step. If they do that, they are having better results than the others. So I say anyone who has a passion and really wants to learn how to do this, the class is open to you. And this is the last one I'll be doing in the States this year. I'll be doing two classes in Australia in November. I'm going to have a class in Perth and a class in Sydney. And in both of those cities, I'm now going to be doing what's called a Level 2 class for the ones that took the class last year when I was over there, because you can't possibly teach everything in one class. It would overwhelm the people. That's what I always say. I can't show you my whole bag of tricks all at one time. We teach the basics first and how to use this. But in those cities, in Perth and Sydney, in November, I'll be giving a level 2 class, just the one day, where we'll be doing discussion and talking to the people who are already doing this, if they're having problems, and showing them some more ways to use this. Then I'll be giving a class again in Wellington, New Zealand, in November also. The same thing, a level 1 and a level 2 class there. And then we'll be going into next year, and we're just now setting dates for next year. And I'll be going back to the college in New Mexico, where I'll be doing a class there, which is, they will give 1.5 college credits for that class. My class is worth 24 hours of continuing education, if you want to take this, if you have to have continuing education. So if anyone is interested in this class, it's going to be the 18th of September in Daytona Beach. You can call my office or check my website. The telephone number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. The website is Ozark Mountain, and it's abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, that's OZARKMT.com. You can check the website for my classes, for my speaking schedules. If you want to find out about sessions, anything you want to know, you can check the website and get back with us. So let's just hope we get a full class for Florida, because it's the last one before I go out of the country again. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed me talking about my trip, and next week we will continue with Dimensions and the New Earth. So good night, everybody.